Good morning. So the trumpets have been blasting. The only thing that could give us hope at this stage is that the first trumpet, it was the white horse. It was the risen Christ who is ultimately going to prevail. Then the second, third, fourth, and then the three woes. It's all been very painful. And I suppose, not easy to be sure of this, of course, a lot of it's to do with a reassurance that the oppressive powers that are afflicting the Christian community are not going to prevail. They're going to have to suffer the consequences of what they're doing. But it also points, I think, to the fact that the Christian communities that John is writing to are suffering a lot from various forces. So now for the fourth time we leave history, we leave the circumstances that they're familiar with in their day-to-day life, really, and we go back and look at things from the divine perspective. The seventh angel sounded the trumpet. This is the final revelation. The seventh angel sounded the trumpet, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and his Messiah. He will reign forever and ever." Everything from this point on, chapter 11, verse 15, to the end of the apocalypse, is a spelling out of this verse. The final insight which John has into the ultimate meaning of history. We go back to chapter 10. In the days when the seventh angel is to sound the trumpet, we've just heard it, the mystery of God will be fulfilled, as he announced to his servants, the prophets. So let's watch that now begin to unfold. So just to revise where we've been, the first four trumpets, the cosmic judgment, then trumpets 5 and 6 are about war and natural disasters, which are happening. They're familiar with earthquake and war and violence. Well, that's going on. And then we had a section on the martyrdom and reward of the Christian leaders in the various communities. And then we have our trumpet just sounded. The seventh angel blew his trumpet. And that opens up for us the Ark of the Covenant, the woman and versus the dragon, the lamb versus the beasts, and victory is assured. And then we move, God's judgment is carried out then, God's victory in seven stages, and that's the plagues, the basins, which we'll come to at another time. Is another way of helping you see where you are. There are the seven seals, you remember, unlocking the meaning of history. And when the seventh seal was unlocked by the Christ, there were seven trumpets. And then we saw the seven trumpets, which just had the seventh, and that's going to open into seven plagues. The seventh trumpet coincides with the third and final woe. Just as the opening of the seventh seal revealed all that is announced by the seven trumpets, so the sounding of the seventh trumpet announces all that is revealed in the remainder of this book. The destruction of all that opposes God and the ultimate vindication of the good. The reign of God through the life-giving of his Messiah is assured of triumph. That's what John is trying to encourage the communities to hold on to that. And the text continues. Then the 24 elders who sit on their thrones before God fell on their faces and worshipped God. So the saints of the Old and New Testament, 12 tribes, 12 apostles, the saints are there singing this. We give you thanks, Lord God Almighty, who are and who were, that you have taken your great power and begun to reign. The reign of God is happening in the with us. The nations raged, but your wrath has come, and the time for judging the dead, for rewarding your servants, the prophets and saints, and all who fear your name, all who revere your name, both small and great, and for destroying those who destroy the earth. That's the hymn of gratitude in heaven. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. That's the book of Daniel. Here we're seeing it fulfilled. Another statement from the book of Daniel, which is right behind our apocalypse. That's its chief source of images. Unto him, the Son of Man, was given dominion and glory and kingship, and his kingship is one that shall not pass away. And the text now. Then God's temple in heaven was opened, and the ark of his covenant was seen within the temple. And there were flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and an earthquake and heavy hail. Each time he has these images, he adds, here he's adding hail. So it'll keep increasing. So there's the temple, and we're looking at the Ark of the Covenant. Comment. John opens this scene with the Ark of the Covenant, for he wishes his readers to see in what follows the fulfillment of God's promise to establish a new and everlasting covenant with his people. The Ark of the Covenant. This is the new covenant. This is the climax of God's action in history, and John dramatizes this by adding heavy hail to the symbols that have appeared already in chapter 8. We're reminded of the legend which tells of the prophet Jeremiah hiding the ark prior to the destruction of Jerusalem. And this is a quote from the second book of Maccabees, alerting us to this folklore. The place shall remain unknown. He was wanting to protect it from the Babylonian army. So as the city's being destroyed and he's there in the middle of it all, the story is he hid the Ark of the Covenant. It's never been found, but that's the story. The place shall remain unknown until God gathers his people together again and shows his mercy. Well, here we are seeing it in this vision in heaven. Then the Lord will disclose these things, and the glory of the Lord and the cloud will appear. The cloud by day and the fire by night to guide us on our journey. And now, the text you're very familiar with, a great sign. And it happens that the word great in the Greek is in an emphatic position. So it's not where the adjectives normally are, so it's meant to startle you a bit as language. So this is a great sign. Now it's a sign, that means we've got to decode it. We've got to try and penetrate to its meaning. And it's great. Was seen in heaven, and this is what it was, a woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pangs in the agony of giving birth. There's a lot to hold in that image, but hold it and I'll try to unpack it for you. Woman in the Old Testament is used symbolically for the people of God, for obvious reasons. People of God as spouse and as mother. John follows this tradition as he portrays God's people as loved by him. So the woman is the church primarily, the mother. The mother church community. He follows this tradition as he portrays God's people as loved by him and as having an obligation to do all in their power to carry on the mission of the Messiah on earth, to bring forth Christ in Smyrna and Ephesus and Thyatira, to carry on the mission of the Messiah on earth and to bring history to its goal. This mission, as the churches of Asia knew only too well, involves them in suffering, the pangs of giving birth. It's painful, but it's beautiful. Writing to the Galatians, Paul could speak of himself being in the pain of childbirth until Christ is formed in you. The role of the church is to continue to bring Christ to birth in his members. Clothing, as we've seen many times now, symbolizes the way a person or community is seen by others. John presents the church, symbolized by the woman, the great sign, as clothed in the sun, presenting to the world the glory and the nurturing warmth of the exalted Christ. The Christian communities are, according to John, bringing salvation to the world. And so he encourages them to remain faithful in spite of the difficulties which they're undergoing and the sacrifices which they have to make. By way of contrast to this text, I'll read to you from Isaiah chapter 26. Like a woman with child, who writhes and cries out in her pangs when she's near her time, so were we because of you, O Lord. We were with child. We, the community of Judah, Jerusalem, we writhed, but we gave birth only to wind. We've won no victories on earth. No one is born to inhabit the world. He sees himself and the community as having failed in their mission. They were meant to bring something forth, and it was all show, and nothing came of it. Nothing but a passing breath. So before I go to the second sign, obviously, it seems obvious to me in here. So the church, from the beginning, has thought of Mary, the mother of Jesus, in that text, and obviously rightly so. She brought forth the Messiah. The key symbol is church. But when we think, add to that the tradition, no reason to doubt it, that Mary went to Ephesus and spent the last years of her life there. When Jesus died, she would have been only 50. So she had some years, whatever, to go, and we don't know that. But she died, as it said, in Ephesus. So with this wonderful woman having been part of their community and would have been known in this Asia Minor area, it's understandable, of course, that this the church, which is the key image, she is seen as the symbol of the church, the mother of the disciples. So that's our first sign. Then in verse 3 of chapter 12, another sign was seen in heaven. Something else we've got to decode. And notice it's not a great sign. It's a sign. So there's no comparison between the two. But what is the sign? It's a great, powerful, red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems, crowns now, but kingly crowns, not victory crowns, on his heads. So there's this shocking, powerful image, of course. The second sign is of a dragon. In the case of the woman, it was the sign that was described as great. Here it's the dragon. Not to be underestimated. As a sign, the dragon is of secondary importance. It's red and therefore associated with the demonic. Back to the horses of the apocalypse. Out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth so that people would slaughter one another. And he was given a great sword. The amazing power of evil in our world, in our own persons and in our communities and in our societies and in our institutions. This evil, which is apparent and incomprehensible. John chooses an animal, thereby indicating that he's referring to something that belongs to the created universe, but is at the same time beyond human comprehension. The dragon. And here's the text continuing. The dragon's tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. Then the dragon is standing before the woman who was about to give birth. The opposing the church, the community, before the woman so that he might devour her child as soon as it was born. Evil doesn't want the Christian community to survive. So it's about to devour, crush it, persecute it, get rid of it. The dragon opposes the forces empowered by God. But as only a third of these are swept down, any victory that evil has is essentially limited. We find the same kind of imagery in Daniel's symbolic description of Antiochus Epiphanes IV, the Syrian king responsible for persecuting the Jews in the early part of the 2nd century BC. This is Daniel chapter 8. The horn grew as high as the host of heaven. It threw down to the earth some of the host and some of the stars and trampled on them. And the host, the stars, they all get confused with angels too in their texts. They're alive. They're God's army. They're God's host. God is the God of hosts. He's talking about the stars, living fire creatures. Well, the dragon is trying to drag down the power of God and can succeed to a limited way. That's Daniel and then Apocalypse. Text, she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to shepherd all the nations with a rod of iron. Quote from Psalm 2. So this is the community. Obviously Mary is present here. The child refers primarily to Christ, born of God's people, the promised one, the Messiah. The powers of evil attempted to destroy him in the crucifixion, but God raised him up and glorified him. The image includes, too, those to whom the church has given birth. And now the text, but her child was snatched away and taken to God and to his throne. The ascension, which we just celebrated. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, so that there she can be nourished for 1,260 days, once again, 3.5 years. So it's a time of persecution. She's been taken into the desert. Hosea, I lead you into the desert, and there I will speak to your heart. So the church is in a precarious position, but it's in the desert and protected by God. The desert is a place where the chosen people experience a special intimacy with God. Isaiah chapter 2. The church too receives its bread from heaven in the desert, prepared for it by God. And now back to our text. War arose in heaven. Well, we're watching from God's heavenly perspective, evil, good and evil fighting. Michael, he's the angel of Israel, the angel of the people, the guardian angel. So Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon here in heaven. Ultimate reality. We're watching it on earth, but this is what we're ultimately, you're going to see what's going to happen on earth by looking at what's happening in heaven. The dragon and his angels fought back, but they were defeated. So they're going to be defeated on earth. There was no longer any place for them in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil, Diabolos. Diabolos, forked tongue, Diabolos, to, you don't know what's good, lying, fake, pretense, temptation, the devil, and Satan means the accuser. So the serpent is decoded here as the devil, Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth. His angels were thrown down with him. So in the ultimate perspective, evil has been destroyed. So don't let's fear it. The book has been unsealed. The end time is here. John is declaring that the battle has been won. You might recall John's, the Gospel of John. I do not be afraid, I have overcome the world, used as a symbol here of the world that rejects grace and God. Satan is thrown down to the earth, and so the identity of Satan and the evidence of his deceiving activity is to be sought here, not in some abstract place. What is the devil? Jesus said to Peter when he said, you're not going to have to suffer. He said, get behind me, Satan. We have to locate the devil. And if somebody says, the devil tempted me, well, some spiritual director or psychiatrist or God knows what has to say, well, hang on, well, so what is this devil? Find it, locate it, name it. It's something to do with here. It's not a dragon. So it has to be fought in the actual historic found, discovered. Temptation is coming from somewhere. It needs to be located, and we're not supposed to cover that over and blame, as in the story of Genesis, blame the snake. I'll read to you from Daniel chapter 12. At that time, Michael, the great prince, the protector of your people, shall arise. There shall be a time of anguish, such as has never occurred since nations first came into existence. But at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who is found written in the book. An image we've already had. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, keep the words and the book sealed until the end of time, the time of the end. This is the time of the end, and John is showing us, unsealing it. The risen Christ is unsealing it. There's a text in Luke chapter 10 too, which plays on the same imagery. The 70 returned with joy, saying, this is after their mission, Lord, in your name even the demons submit to us. And Jesus said to them, I watched Satan fall from heaven like a flash of lightning. See, I've given you authority to tread on snakes and scorpions. We could put in brackets dragons. And over all the power of the enemy, nothing will hurt you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits submit to you. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. And now our text continues. We've seen the woman, the church, and then we've seen Satan. We're going to locate that better later, but evil, struggling, fighting. But we know the real victory is going to be. It's already established, the victory. So then the text goes on. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven proclaiming, now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of the Messiah. For the accuser, Satan, that's what Satan means, the accuser of our comrades has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. But they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb, which we've met already. The life-giving of Jesus on the cross, the loving unto death. And by the word of their testimony, for they did not cling to life even in the face of death. Rejoice then, you heavens and those who dwell in them, but woe to the earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you with great wrath, because he knows his time is short. John is warning the community. Evil is around, it's powerful. Don't let it deceive you, but expect opposition. So from the ultimate perspective of the transcendent, evil has already been conquered. However, the struggle is still going on here on earth. John is summoning the church to courage, to perseverance, and to hold on to the victory already achieved by Christ, whatever the appearances and the price of this struggle. The power and frustration of evil is evident in the way that Christians are being persecuted. But, we've just been told, his time is short. Evil has no enduring significance and has already suffered the essential defeat. As John said earlier, they're in the desert, but they are being nourished by God there. The manna from heaven is there, the Eucharist. The apocalypse, the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she can be nourished. The community is assured of God's nourishment as we are, but the battle is still there to be fought. After yesterday's marathon, I thought I should give you a gentle morning. So this is the conclusion of this presentation, and I'll come back at 11:15 and take you further. So let's finish with a piece of music. I am with you on the journey, the risen Christ, with us, the church community here on the journey.